Bienvenidos y welcome to the Biz Bruja Podcast, where reclaiming our powerful intuition, our sacred medicina, embracing our magic and healing ancestral patterns, invoke powerful creations in our own well-being, our lives, familias, community, and our businesses. Remembering that our businesses are so important at this time. I'm the creatrix of this blogcast, the Biz Bruja herself, Vanessa Codorniu, a modern-day bruja, fourth-generation psychic medium, clinical hypnotist, energy healer, and soul biz mentor and coach. An Argentine-American who started reading adults at 16, became a professional intuitive at 22, and now guides creatives, intuitives, healers, and entrepreneurs to break through fears, connect to the practical power of their intuition so they can serve the world powerfully. Hola, mi gente bella. Hello, beautiful people. I'm so excited to finally get Cristina Garcia here. So everybody say hello to Cristina. Hey, Cristina.
Hi, Vanessa. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Bueno, what can I say before I read her bio? So I've been watching her on Instagram. She's been watching me on Instagram. We've been supporting each other. And I'm just like, when I look at anything that she shares, all the vibration, the energy that I feel is like this woman is on a mission. She's solid. She's real. She is bringing it. And I was like, well, I want to help her bring it. So let's get her here to have a deep conversation and to support you all and to invite you into more liberatory practices, into more decolonization and more awareness. So I'm just so happy to have you here, Cristina.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. I appreciate it.
Great. Antes de empezar, I do want to read your bio. And of course, my people, you know, anyone who comes in here has a lot of life to share, and our bio is what it is. So I will share her website, her program, her information, all on the bottom of the podcast info, so you're not going to miss out on anything. So this is the shorter version, as you all know. Cristina Garcia has over 18 years working in program development, policy advocacy, and community organizing. She brings an anti-oppressive, trauma-informed, and healing justice approach to working with leaders and entrepreneurs seeking to redefine their leadership identity, values, and helping shape the internal cultures of their organization and businesses. She works with leaders who want to show up more grounded in their unique leadership voice and are ready to go all in on the work of collective liberation. Cristina has a bachelor's in business and a master's degree in social work from the University of Chicago. So I read in one part that you're a daughter of Mexican immigrants, and I somehow want to start there. Like, were you born in this country? Did your parents come in? Like, what was your experience as the daughter of Mexican immigrants?
Yeah, thank you for asking about that. That's probably one of the parts that I love to highlight the most, to be honest with you. And I've grown into that more recently, right? And now as an adult. And I think for me, I always tell my groups when I do any kind of workshop or presentation that it's important to highlight the fact that my parents are Mexican immigrants. And because I always want to make sure that I'm bringing all my lineages, all my identities to the table so that everybody in that room knows exactly who they're talking to. And I think it's important because, you know, it really is who we are. It really informs, right, our own identity, our trajectory in life, where we come from, what we've done. And it also, very importantly, honors nuestros papás, nuestros ancestros, right? The folks that are not here, the people that had to fight to overcome all these struggles so that I could be doing this today, right? And so if I had to share a little bit about so I was born in El Paso, Texas. So I'm a fronteriza child. And I always say I also have roots at the U.S.-Mexico border. And for me, that's also very, very cultural. That's very political. Vengo de dos abuelos que fueron braceros. So both my grandparents were bracero workers to the United States. And what that is the longest standing, biggest U.S. Foreign worker program, right? At the time, if folks that know a little bit about this, they would in exchange for having seasonal workers here in the United States, they made this agreement con Mexico. Of course, it was cheap labor for the United States, but they invited, or they would grab, you know, I don't know how many men, I forgot the figures, pero que vinieran a trabajar acá, and in exchange, they would get papers for their families. So both of my abuelos came that way. And as a result, uno de mis abuelos, el papá de mi papá, moved to the border, moved to the sort of Juarez area. So my dad was raised in Juarez, and then I was born in El Paso eventually. So yeah, that's why for me, it's like a little bit very cultural, but very political, and very, it's a huge message, right? That understanding your history and where you come from, like, we didn't just get here yesterday. Like, I know we're still, you know, oppressing, exploiting immigrantes all day long in this country, but we literally have been coming to this country to build it since I don't know when.
Well, yeah. Also, what is it? There's a saying that says, we didn't cross the borders crossed us. I don't mm-hmm. know how to say it, but it's
yes,
that.
And absolutely.
And any of us who have indigenous backgrounds, and a lot of Latinos do, no matter what they look like, right?
Yes.
I know that I do. My grandmother's indigenous. We came through North America anyway in our journey and then kept going. Some of us kept going to Mexico. Some of us kept going to Peru, where my ancestry is, and Argentina, where my ancestry is. So we were already here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. And so, I mean, that's why I smirk, right, at people that are like out there, these folks, you know, kind of talking down on people, asking folks, why don't they go back to where they came from? And I always laugh because I'm like, really? Like, you must not know a hint of history, because our people have always been here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And so when did you start getting politically aware? Was it back in El Paso, Texas? Was it in school? What was the moment where kind of you knew you wanted to do program development, that you wanted to make an impact in your community or the collective? Mm-hmm. Not even liberation yet fully, like what you're doing now, but just like in the beginning stages, like, was there a particular experience, or was there a realization, or it just happened gradually?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a home that was very unconventional, in the sense that my dad always engaged the children on all topics, and all conversations were being had around that dinner table, right? And so my dad was very particular about asking us what we thought about things, right? And so there were open-ended questions. I think as a young adult growing up, as a young teen, as a young child, I just remember my dad always being so curioso, always literally bringing up like a social issue, a social cause. And I always say my dad is probably one of the most intelligent men I know. He is book taught, right? He's probably read more history, more books than most people that I know. And even though he didn't have the opportunity to go to school, he literally taught us, his children, toda la historia de Latinoamérica, right? This has informed my social consciousness, right? Like, this informed the way I saw the world, right? And then I grew up in the southwest side of Chicago, right? I was only in El Paso until I was 3 years old. And then my parents moved to Chicago. And then, of course, I lived in an immigrant enclave right there. And so for me, when I was a child, I was fine, right? I was like, this is awesome. Like, I get tamales and tortillas at the corner, right? Like, I could just walk outside and I see mi gente represented back to me, right? And so it was groovy while I was sort of growing up in that community, right? With people who spoke Inglés y Español all around me, people who looked like me. So I had that. And I think that upbringing is wonderful in retrospect, because it really anchored me in who I am, and the sort of like the presence and the worth and the value of our gente, right? Then fast forward to college and grad school, and then I started to see the, like, quote unquote real world, right? Like, the folks that didn't look like us, the folks that were like beginning to speak over me, the folks that thought they knew more about my history than right, than me. I started to hear terms like inner city kids and underrepresented. And I was like, what is all that? Right. Like that's a lot of the jargon gets used in the social sciences to describe people like children like me, right. Who grew up poor, who grew up a child of immigrants, who grew up in el barrio. Right. And so I was like, I just started to feel a certain kind of way about those things, Vanessa. And then so it wasn't until grad school that I was really like, poof, like I started to get really angry. Right? I was just like, so you couple what my upbringing, right? My very sort of politically, socially aware upbringing with like, now I started to get confronted with, you know, just white supremacy started to show up. I didn't know what it was back then exactly until I started kind of reading more and kind of getting more educated. But yeah, until I was just like, I've had it. So my coursework in grad school, doing my social work program, none of it had Indigenous representation. I was learning program design. I was learning program development. And I think by year two, I did the 3-year program. I was like on my surveys to all the professors that would like listen, right? I would be like, why aren't we studying global movements? Why aren't we studying the way other Indigenous cultures and societies have organized themselves, because they've had solutions to a lot of these problems because they themselves were doing it. So I just became very agitated. And I think it was there where it was just all came to a juncture that I was like, this is BS and I need to figure this out. Right. So yeah. And then I just kind of, I guess the way that translated to en la práctica, I'm really big about, like, you know, like we were just talking a little while ago, you could have all the letters after your name, you could have all the degrees you want, but if you don't have the lived experience, if you don't have the practice, a lot, you could just maybe throw that out the window, because, o sea, necesitas saber what you're doing. So I think, again, I went back into community work. So at that time, I had a buddy and I was like, hey, how do I get into community work? How do I get into what you're doing? Because my first jobs were in business, Vanessa. My undergrad is in business.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I was doing. I was like working for like Evis Rent-A-Car. I was working for the hotel industry. I was like, I liked it. Don't get me wrong. It was a little jazzy. I had some privileges, right? Free parking downtown Chicago, stuff like that at like in my 20s, right? And so that was like, okay, that's cool. But then I was like, nah, man, I really want to be part of this movimiento. How do I do it? And so I just started asking people. And then the next thing you know, somebody introduced me to somebody else and they're like, you would be great for this position. So I got into, nonprofit work. And I think that's where I got my, I think I put that in my, and so my trajectory was about 18 years in nonprofit in the areas of either whether I was building a program, I was managing a program, I was doing political advocacy. And up until recently, I was doing a lot of lobbying in Capitol Hill. So all of
amazing.
That. Yeah.
Hey, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that so much.
Mm-hmm.
So what led to you? ¿Qué ocurrió algo? Did something happen? Or was it just like a natural progression from being esa niña con tu papá que los hacía hablar, that talked to you at the dinner table or breakfast table? And mm-hmm. then you went to life and you started to realize things. Then to going into corporate, then going into nonprofit. Like, what inspired you to start exploring creating your own liberation work mm-hmm. and your own programs and your own coaching? Like, what brought you into that?
Yeah, I think it was experiencing a lot of, I think, bureaucracy and experiencing a lot of, like, these things were not said explicitly, but it was in the practice, like doing things because they've always done them that way. Mm-hmm. And then adding layers of what I consider not like unnecessary layers, bullshit. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was like, no, the people have the answers. If we just go straight to the people, we don't need to create unnecessary layers of things to get to some of the solutions that we're looking for, right? And so I just started to really believe that we have gifts, our own gifts, that a lot of people professional individuals like me were not necessarily tapping into. And my mind started to wander on what would it look like if we really tapped into the fullest, most wholesome, most innate talents that we have, and we led from that, mm-hmm. from that place, right? Like, not what's on my resume, not a review that my last supervisor gave me, but like truly incorporating all of my own trayectoria, all of my own wisdom, right? Yes. The wisdom that has been passed on from our indigenous ancestors, from our abuelos, right? Like, I mean, I was sitting in El Granadero with my grandma when I was a little kid while ayudándole a desgranar mazorcas, which are corn, right? Mm-hmm. So doing corn shelling, I think it's what it's called in English. Like, and so we just have, and then, you know, we just have so much wisdom, I think, in our communities that isn't tapped into. And absolutely. I was interested in like doing things differently. I was like, when I started doing this work, Vanessa, and I don't know if you probably didn't go this far back, but I started focusing on anti-oppression work. I started focusing on healing my own oppression.
Yes.
Because I thought that was necessary, because
I think it is.
It is very necessary, right? And my thing has always been, even to this day, it's looking at our identities, right? So I lead with that part because it is our identities that will inform the rest of your past. And so I go hard on identity healing work, because if you don't know who you are, if you don't understand what makes you tick, where you come from, ¿qué te formó? Mm-hmm. Right? Who are your people? Like, these are real questions that I ask in my workshops, right? Like, this is not just like weedy, 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 like my dad would say. But these are like real questions, my prompt questions, right? If you don't know these things about yourself, guess what? Other people will tell you about yourself.
Yeah.
And guess what? We will believe them because of what? Internalized oppression.
Absolutely.
Right? So I knew what I knew, right? And I knew that my gifts were not being fully utilized in my last employment, right? Mm-hmm. And I needed to get these gifts out of me, a toda costa.
And I get it.
Yeah. And the best way I knew how to do that, Vanessa, was to, I was doing a parallel healing journey, right? So this was going on in the background, right? Like, it's not like I just woke up one morning and I was like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. No. This comes as a result of my own healing journey and my own realizations that I'm like, this needs to be it. This is it right here. This is at the crux of everything we do, right? So, this was sort of like the precursor. I was going through healing my own internalized oppression. I really wanted to resaltar quién soy yo as a way to model to others, similar folks like me, right? Who could relate to my background, relate to where I've been, and that they all could also show themselves for the wholeness of who they are in your multiple identities and not be afraid for us to really step up that way. Mm-hmm.
I love that so much. And yeah. Something that you were talking about, healing our internalized oppression. You know, I sat in Sweat Lodge with my Lakota teacher, Beverly Little Thunder, for 18 years. And I wasn't trying to be a shaman or anything like that. I just sat in Sweat Lodge. That was my healing process. But most recently, after I found out that my grandmother was adopted, I knew she was indigenous, but I didn't know de donde. So yo me imaginaba de Argentina. So I would look up like the tribes there. And then I found out that era de Peru, right? Where I was born, by the way. I was born in Peru, but I was like, I think I just came out there. And in the process of the training and all the initiations with the Inca Medicine School and the Apaza family that I've had the last 3 years, I will tell you this. You see students from Germany, from Finland, they have no qualms in learning indigenous wisdom.
Mm.
Pero ves a la gente latina. And we feel bad. By the way, we feel bad. Because I've had this discussion. Mm-hmm. And whether they're darker than me, lighter than me, like me, curly hair, kinky hair, straight hair, whatever we are, because we're all very mixed and different.
Right.
There's a part of us that's like, oh God, you know? Oh, like, do we deserve this? Mm-hmm. But the folks from Europe, and I'm not even talking American, because that's a whole
right.
nothing. They were like, yeah, let me learn how to do an ofrenda, you know? And meanwhile, we're like, we're all talking about it. I was like, I don't know. I feel bad. You know, I'm so mixed with European. Am I worthy of this wisdom? My friends are like, you've been doing cleansings with huevo since you were, my mom used to have all of us lined up and teach us how to do the huevo cleanse, limpia. Like, I grew up with a very spiritual home where we would go there first, then the doctor, but the doctor came right after, but it was always spiritual first.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that, and that came back to me when you were just talking about how a lot of us Latinx, sometimes we feel bad about, we should know more of that, or maybe it didn't get passed on, or some of it got cut off, right? Because of oppression, because of religion. But yet other folks come in, they're just like, nothing. And so it's crazy to me. And so we need to keep decolonizing and keep healing, because I had that experience. Like, we were all together. We were like chit-chatting. And then we were like, wow, are we worthy of this? And then it's like, what? These are our ancestors.
Right.
And we're questioning, but they're not. They're not even, they're not even from America, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, God bless them, because think of medicine school and the Apaza family's like, look, we share it with the world because the world needs the medicine. That's it. So they're like, quien lo aprenda, quien lo comparta, as long as they do it the right way, with the heart and the love. But that's something I noticed. And so if anybody's listening, like, I get you. And that's part of the decolonizing process.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Internalized, like, racism and oppression of ourselves, or we're like, So what was the process of leaving your job that you just did a couple of years ago and then setting yourself up as a coach? Has it been tough for you? I mean, all of us, we get
challenged. Yeah, it's been a challenge. Yeah, but I just want to comment on what you just said, Vanessa. Like, absolutely. Like, I find that a lot. I mean, I work with majority people of the global majority, women identified for the most part, but I've also had male clients. I like to say that because I'm so proud of them. oh my God, this is one of the things that really irks me, Vanessa. Like, that is your medicine. That is your God-given medicine. Like, you were born with that, right? It is the oppression that comes from colonialism that had tried to implant all these other organized religions into us, right? They literally came, nos conquistaron, and they, right? This is what they utilize, their tactics, so that we could forget who the heck we were, we are. But yeah, and so that's, I couldn't agree more about that. I think we need to reclaim all our medicines and stop getting hung up on sort of like the, am I doing it right? Is it this? Like, do what your body is calling you to do, right? I think that for me, and all we need to see is go back to what my mom gave us this all the time. Right, the citos, like, she would be putting ajos in there, limones, white, like, that's natural medicine. That's
plant. Like, there's like a stomach issue in my home.
When
I'm like, here's the menta, here's a peppermint oil pill. And then they're like, oh, the pain left. I'm like, my great grandmother gave me that, you know. Now there's a modern form. Pero tiene razón en nuestra medicina, and then we're questioning it. And there's something else that just came up in my mind for a second. I remember being in an initiation in Peru, and I remember like crying internally and, you know, seeing the spirit or the souls of my ancestors who were Peruvian. And again, I'm very, very mixed. Yes, absolutely. European mixed, as I said, West African before we got on, and indigenous, and a lot of different European, right? It's not just Spain or Italy or anything. It's like a lot of them. that my ancestor came up and I was crying in this initiation and they were like, it's not your fault that you're like light skinned. Do you know what I mean? They're like, it's not your, you're being an ally to any of your brown and black brothers and sisters, and you are doing good work. But that, that also guilt or upset or like not like enough of something sometimes.
Right. Right.
But they're like, this is what happened. And el blancamiento happened in South America and Argentina and other places. And they were just so kind to me. And so for anybody who's listening, you know, there's so much healing that we need, and colorism is real. And there are privileges that lighter people get. Mm-hmm. And how do we shift and change that? So how do you address that in like your work that you do?
Yeah, that's a great question, Vanessa, because I actually did work with one client who had a lot of what you're talking about, because she was very light skinned, right? She was questioning whether she was Mexican, whether she could call herself Mexicana. And I'm like, amor, you're tus papás son Mexicanos, right? Like, and it, you know, she had studied under a lot of white spiritual teachers and who had done a number on her psyche, right? There's a lot of harm done in these white spiritual spaces, right? And so the, I've posted about this. I've written about this. It doesn't matter what color you are. You have, if you have papás, abuelos, who are from Latin America y el Caribe, you get to claim those parts of yourself, mm-hmm. right? Yes, we can go down the rabbit hole and we can start to like mince and parse and say like, well, you know, but we're not about to do all of that, because that takes us into like blood quantum and all that BS. That's, and we that's horrible, mm-hmm. right? I would say there's a lot of things that have been taken away from us, right? Los idiomas nativos, right? Los idiomas indígenas. Some people, a lot of people still have that, but some of us that have been really colonized, ultra colonized, right? Like, unfortunately, we no contamos con esos idiomas, right? So that's one thing. But look at the food that we eat, right? Look at nuestras expresiones. Look at the way we carry ourselves through the world, right? All of, there's richness in all of that. There's so much wisdom and richness in all of that. And so this is a very deep spiritual process of unlearning the harmful things that we've been taught, right? Mm-hmm. Because colonization, it was literally the tool of the oppressor to remove us from our core,
mm-hmm.
to remove us from the original parts of who we are. And so if they can make you think that these things, your heritage, your cultura, right, your history, if they can make you believe that those were not yours, or that somehow you're confused about them, right? Or that somehow there should be shame there for some reason, then they've won.
Right.
They've won, mm-hmm. right? And so decolonization is a lifelong journey. Again, we don't learn this overnight. We don't learn this in a book. We have to be very intentional about the teachers that we surround ourselves with, because there are unfortunately teachers out there that are calling themselves teachers, spiritual leaders, and they're harming.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm sure you've had your share of folks that you've come in contact, Vanessa, with your long trajectory and being one of the OGs in this work.
But it was, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was invited to a conference once, one of the first spiritual conferences in New York in the 2000s. And they brought me, when they're like, oh, well, we thought of Latina, we thought of you. And I'm like, okay, thanks. I mean, can I just go as myself? I mean, I love to represent my Latina, you know. But then I was also like, let me bring in my, you know, Afro-Latina friend who's very gifted. And they're like, no, we just need one. So, yeah. You know, there's, you know, all these stories, and there's way more of that too. But I love everything that you're saying, and it's so important for us to reclaim. And I wanted something that came to mind earlier was being from New York. I've been surrounded by Afro-Latina teachers, by Caribeña, like Cuba, like Puerto Rico, Santo Domingo. Like one of my teachers was a 21 Divisiones, like priestess. This is a Dominican spiritual path, like almost Orishas, right? With African and Christian deities together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so my experience doing circles in New York was that Latinos were doing cleanses and agua limpiándose, that they were not as religious. Then when I connected with people in California, and I'm talking about 4 years ago, there seemed to be more religiosity, more fear. Was there something that you could speak to? I don't know if you know. Was it something that happened to the folks that live there? Was it a longer process? Because I feel like my experience in New York, like I've been sitting around readers who are doing limpias and like since I'm 6 years old, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then going to different ones who are different from different countries, and they're just talking out loud and talking about breaking free and all this very openly, not so much like church, even though we were like, my mom was like, bueno, somos católicos nuestra manera. But when I started to meet a lot of folks from California, church was really ingrained.
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple of reasons for that, Vanessa. And in full disclosure, I've been living in California for 6 years. I'm originally from Chicago.
Oh, yeah, you've been
right? Yeah. And so El Paso, Chicago, California, right? Like, again, I had to be near the border. I moved first to San Diego, y ahorita I'm in Long Beach. First of all, we have to remember that this part here, esa tierra, era tierra mexicana, right?
Sí.
Era tierra mexicana. So we're going to start there. And so I think we were saying this in the beginning, right? Like a lot of the folks that live here are not early arrivals, immigrantes. They're like third, fourth, sixth,
eighth. OGs of the
they're
land.
They're OGs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. To the land, right? Mm-hmm. The land's theirs. And you also have to remember that colonization was deep here in this part of the country. Vinieron los franciscanos de España, right? And they literally mapped out the entire state of California, settling 21 missions. They still stand here today, right? I mean, they're glorified and they're like, you know, there's one here. I just visited one in esta San Luis, what is it called? San Luis Obispo? No. San Juan Capistrano. I get them all mixed up. San Juan Capistrano, one of the oldest missions, right? And it's turned into a museum. And so they came, they laid out all these missions, right? Con la idea de to literally eradicate indigenous and native teaching. That means subjugation through removing their language, removing their practicas, their spiritual, you know, gifts, colonizing their children.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, I would say it is so implanted here, right? La religión was so, it had time to really like seep into people, right? It was front and center. It was like the mecca of colonization in many ways. It also happens to be very Mexican, whereas in the eastern part of the country, like you were describing in New York, right? There's Caribeños. You've got a lot of folks. I think Mexicans are the minority out there, mm-hmm. right? Mexicanos also tend to be, we tend to be a little bit more conservative in general, right? And, you know, whatever, that could be, you know, for different reasons, pero también. And so what I have found is that Mexicanos have retained their spiritual practices, but undercover, right? So you talk to anybody and they're like, yeah, yeah, you talk to any Mexicano here and they'll tell you, their grandmas were curanderas, their moms were da da da, you know, like everybody in their lineage was a curandera, like, right, it was a plant medicine woman. So, but I do think that historically, colonization was so rich and so deep here that it was it just became so implanted in people. And so as a result, it might show up as, you know, being a little bit more fearful around speaking to these practices and really embracing them, even though there's a huge reclamation process happening. Absolutely. Right. Yes. So, yeah.
Most of my clients are from California.
So, you know,
But I wanted to get your thoughts on that, just for folks listening who may relate and be like, oh, wow, maybe that's why I feel like that. That's true. My grandmother was a curandera, but I'm feeling scared to like go in and trust myself, you know? So thank you for giving us your insight. I wanted to ask you, is there an ancestral pattern that you had to heal or break through in order to be yourself and do this work that you're doing?
I mean, aren't we always breaking ancestral patterns? I think the one of the big ones for me is, you know, always breaking through that oppression in our bodies and in my body, the oppression of, you know, being subjugated, coming from a sort of poverty background, right? Where, I know my dad, as outspoken as he was, you know, he was very intelligent in his own right, but he was also highly exploited in his jobs, right? He was highly exploited, did the normal, like, low-wage worker, right? Factory worker, janitorial work, etc. And so I think we grew, at least I grew up not feeling like great about myself. I grew up like menospreciándome. Mm-hmm. Is that like
sí, yo entiendo eso.
Like, well, how do I say that in English?
Like putting yourself down or not.
Yeah, that. Like putting myself down, doubting myself. I grew up not thinking that I was enough.
Yes.
Not thinking that I was as good as the other people that had money, people that had more resources in my family, right? So I grew up very inhibited in that sense, even though like I grew up in a beautiful environment of seeing my own people. Like the downfall of that is or was that I wasn't exposed at an early age to the opportunities in general, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I didn't travel until I was in my 20s, until I could afford my own international ticket, right? My parents didn't travel because they couldn't afford it. We didn't take vacations, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I also grew up hearing a lot about money, my parents having, you know, not arguing, but trying to make ends meet and trying to stretch a dollar as much as they could, right? And so that was very limiting to when a young child's growing up and they're constantly hearing like, we can't get that because it's too expensive. We can't eat out. We can't go on vacations. You can't join that club. We can't put you up for clases de arte, clases de música, none of those things, nothing. So I grew up not having any of that, not having all that access. And so I think that that's a lifelong, and I get emotional thinking about it because that's like a lifelong, like something that continues to need healing in me, right? Like, I mean, surely there's so many children that need more than that, right? Like Cristina. So this is another thing, right? Like needing to be grateful all the time about the thing. Tienes un plato de comida enfrente de ti. You have housing. You should be grateful, right? Yeah. So as I say these, all of this is coming up, right? But at the same
time. De ser humilde. I was taught
ser humilde. Oh, my goodness.
Baja la cabeza. People sound surprised because they're like, oh, your family was from Argentinian and they told you to do that. I'm like, yeah, they did. They told me, dejate perdonar la presencia. I was like, may they forgive your presence. Like, just put your head down and work, you know?
Oh, I've never heard that. Yeah.
People get surprised. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah, world where they were still immigrants. They still worked in factories when they got here. My father eventually had his own business, but that was a lot of effort and working, you know, 2-3 jobs in New York, not being home and driving a cab, you know, the things that we have to do. Breaking those that we deserve, that we are deserving. So I was like, when you said you weren't exposed to art, I'm like, some acting class, some art singing for you, some dancing. What are the plans?
Yeah.
Your inner child, right? Like, that's what I do for myself. I give myself what I feel like I didn't get.
Yeah. And that's been the journey recently, Vanessa, like giving my inner child. I think when I set out, like I said, when I set out and I could, I got my first few paychecks when I started working back in my 20s, like I decided that I wanted to go travel and see the world. Somehow something in me was like, you need to go see the world. And I was fascinated with getting on a plane. And like, and so I did a study abroad program when I was in college. So yeah, I was pretty young, and I spent 3 months in Austria. And they only had a couple of countries. It was like Austria and England. So I was like, no, Austria, because I want to be in the mainland and I want to travel within it, right? So I got to travel to Italia, Francia, Hungaria, Italy, right? And so that was amazing. That really kind of laid down the foundation. And so for me now, I mean, California is beautiful. I get in my car and I've been, you know, taking like road trips up to Northern California. I'm a Pisces sun, Cancer, rising Taurus moon. So I have to be close to a body of water almost at all times. I water just calls me. So I'm the happiest by the ocean. In Chicago, we had Lake Michigan and it was beautiful as well, but we could only enjoy it in the summer, of course. Otherwise it was frozen, literally frozen. And so, yeah, I think what calls my inner child now is like just being goofy, allowing myself to just be like, and now it's like, I give myself permission just to be like super goofy, clumsy. Like I kind of poke fun at myself. I'm like, oh, that's just my clumsy self, whatever. Right. Like I've given myself permission to just be out and about talking, walking my dog, right? Like I get into these, I've done, me pongo a bailar aquí en mi sala, yo sola. I've done videos and I posted them and I'm like, Christina, without like a care of like what I look like actual just dancing.
I love it. You dance like no one was watching.
Los tambores, it just called me, right? And so
I've
never taken any formal dancing classes or whatever, pero I mean, me encanta lo que, todo lo que es movimiento, like free movement, right? Like versus choreography. I am not really big with choreography, but anything that is like free movement, like I've always been a big dancer. Me encanta ir a bailar afuera también en los bailes.
God, I love it. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I want to ask you a couple more questions when we have to close, even though I could talk to you forever and listen to you forever. What is a don or a gift, an ancestral gift that you're leaning into as you do your work, as you grow your business?
Yeah. I think I've been leaning into more recently the ancestral gift of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it took me a long time to be able to say, like, I have something to teach others, right? I certainly wasn't saying this in my 20s or 30s, right? Like I'm like, huh, why do you feel so good about this gift? Like, why does it come so, it feels like it comes easy to me now, but it's taken a lifetime to cultivate it. And,
integrate things.
Huh?
It takes time to integrate.
Yeah, it takes a long time. People don't tell you this when you're in your 20s. It's going to take a long time, honey. Kind of act like the world is your oyster in your 20s. You could do whatever you want. And you're like, but it's not like happening. But I think my dad was a great teacher to us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he still is. And I think I've just been surrounded with great teachers, people that had wisdom and that would pour that wisdom into me, right? Several, just key mentors in my career. I've been surrounded by revolutionary thinkers as well, who, I mean, I would sit there and just kind of, I was a student, Vanessa, that would need to sit in front of the classroom. I would need to hear the teacher or the professor, like I would need to hang on their every word because I'm a nerd. I love learning. And I'm very much with experiential learning. Like I love interactive spaces. I love to just kind of like, well, why do you think that? Well, why is that perspective, right? Like, where does that come from? Help me understand where you formulated that perspective in yourself, right? That's for me the important piece, not what you're saying, how you arrived there.
The journey,
The journey. And so I think it's my teaching that I feel like I had teachers in my lineage. I actually need to do the past life regression. Is that what
I do that work?
Yeah. I need to do one of those. I'm like, you for sure had a past life where where you were doing some of this work. I always think that to myself.
You did.
Yeah, for sure. And so yeah, me encanta like to just kind of teach from everything that has been sort of passed on to me, offered to me. And it's like now become a compilation of things. I couldn't point to one area, but it's literally a sort of compilation of, you know, ancestral gifts and wisdom and formal training y luego in la práctica, right? Lived experience. So all of that.
I love it. So tell us a little bit about your Liberation Lab before we close and, you know, what is it? What is the invitation for people? Like, What does it look like? What is it? What are the gifts of it? And how did you come up with it?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for asking about this, Vanessa. I have been dreaming up this lab, the Liberatory Leadership Lab, for about at least a year and a half, right? It like just kind of came to me like there needed to be a place where we can do this learning and unlearning work together, where folks could get a deep dive into liberatory work, with the lens of leadership and healing, right? Because I think they come hand in hand. Those two things come hand in hand. And so I also wanted to make sure that this lab had themes of identity consciousness. So these are actually the four pillars. So I'm going to start there. Identity consciousness is one, right? If we're not constantly on a seeking journey to continue to find who we are at our core, then we're leaving things behind, right? So that needs to be integrated into our leadership skill set. That needs to be, you know, really embedded into the way we lead and show up through the world. The other one is somatic awareness. Somatic awareness is like, I'm of the belief that you can't be a good leader if you're not in tune with your body, if you're not in tune with the way you're showing up, right? So like what a lot of us get sometimes, I used to get really nervous giving public presentations. I mean, I would turn red, my hands would shake, todo, right? And that's because I wasn't grounded in who I was and what I was doing, right? And I didn't know that at the time, right? But I would have so much anxiety around a simple, like, you're going to get up in front of, like, a small audience, like, 8 people, and, you know, you need to talk about this topic. I would get so nervous. So somatic awareness really invites us to be fully connected and aware of our bodies. What is our body doing, right? And not only that, but what is our body doing in relation to other bodies in the room, right? Because it's not just your own body. Then the third one is decolonized leadership. Again, everything we've been talking about, right? How do we put this into a leadership program that then teaches folks new ways of leading, right? Because we're all so accustomed to the top-down, hierarchical, right, power over structures of leadership. And that's a lot of us, that most of us, because that's all we've been taught. That's how we've been, you know, conditioned, trained to whole leadership spaces, right? Like if I'm the leader, then people need to listen to me, so to speak, right? And decolonized learning or decolonized leadership invites folks to say, no, we're in a collective space, and this is a circular learning process where we're learning from each other, right? And so going back to theories around collectivism, which a lot of this is rooted in the indigeneity, right? A lot of this comes from the lineages that we come from. So all I'm doing is like bringing us back to that, these ways of learning and leading. And then systems thinking, right? Systems thinking is one of my fortes, right? With the, I'm a macro social worker. So everything I do is from the lens of like, social, the cultural, the political, right? Like, and so how do we understand ourselves as a part of the ecosystem, right? Not as an individual, not solely as an individual person, right? So what the Liberatory Leadership Lab is a 6-month program in which we will start with the self, right? And we will explore themes around the self. Moving into the interpersonal, we will have things like the energetics of leadership, right? We will have things like power dynamics. How do we break down power dynamics? How do we understand them, identify them, right? And then we will also move into the systems realm, right? And we will understand how to unpack a lot of what we see out there in the professional world and in our careers, this is open for folks who are either leaders in their own organizations, right? They're managing teams, they're executive directors, they are managers, supervisors, they have teams, right? And they're sort of working with individuals or entrepreneurs who are also sort of establishing themselves. They're wanting to lead in a more liberatory way. And it is a 6-month invitation. I think the key of the program is that everything is experiential. And so we will be sort of working together on developing our visions, developing how do our value systems inform our visions? And then how do we operationalize all of that, right? So these are not just models, theories, frameworks, right? It's also a way that we understand how do we, going back to like drawing on our own innate skills, our own talents, how do we tap into those, develop those into our own visions, right? Because all the time we're running around trying to look at somebody else's framework. We're running around, somebody else is trying to teach us it. Here are the 5 steps and now you can do this. Just apply this framework and you know, my framework and then to your thing, and it doesn't work. In my experience, it doesn't work that way. It's not until you yourself come up with what is in your vision, what is in your nature, how is it that you want to show up and teach and lead and coach, right? Like if for coaches out there as well. So I think this is like I call it a lab because we're actually going to get into the doing. We're getting into like the 4th week of every month. So we have 6 labs in which we're going to be actually workshopping through people's programs, through people's projects that they're working on. And so providing feedback in real time. And so I'll also be doing obviously coaching in the lab. And then they also get 3 individual coaching sessions with me. So yeah, it's a holistic approach. I know it will be like a full immersion into sort of decolonized leadership. And then really the outcome is that you walk away with your own individualized vision setting and framework and knowing how to operationalize it into your own either business or the project that you're working on.
I think that is amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very complete.
Yeah.
All right, girl, this is so good. So where can people find you? The information is going to be there, but if you want to tell us where to find you and then website.
Yeah, for sure. My new website, I have a new website. It's liberation-leadership. I can't even still remember it. liberation-leadership.com. And they can email me at Christina@liberation-leadership.com. And then my Instagram handle is no dash. It's just Liberation Leadership, @Liberation Leadership. Yep. That's where people can find me.
And Christina, is there anything else that, like, a last word, something that's on your heart for our audience based on your work, your journey, anything that you talked about that's in your heart that you want to share?
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, the last thing I'll share is your vision is already in your heart. It takes your unique medicine is already on your heart. It's already inside of you. It takes the cultivation. It takes that inner work and that examining of the self to just help it manifest, help it come out into the real world, right? And have it, you can turn that into what you'd like, but those gifts need to come out. They need to be shared because I think ese es nuestro, that's our calling for us to share our gifts with the world. Yeah.
I love that. And I agree with you. That's why we were born, right? We are seed, need to blossom, and that's it. Sharing our gifts with the world. Compartiendo nuestra medicina. I love that.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Christina. You're amazing. Mi gente hermosa, please follow Christina and explore this. It sounds like a really thorough program. And we need thorough programs too. You know, we can read about liberation, we could dip a toe, but at some point we have to go all in, do the full work inside and out to be able to change systems and to create our own frameworks as she shared. So, mucho amor, Cristina, mucho amor a todos. Yeah. Everyone.
Hasta luego.